Greetings, friends, and welcome back to this episode of Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. My name is Shelley, your host. If this is your first time listening, thank you. And if you are a returning listener, thank you so much for your support. I really appreciate it. This week's episode was with Jara Lindgren, and we just talked about so many different things. I don't really have time to go into all of it here in the introduction, but she tells us a story about the time that she received a gift from a homeless person, and we just go into a conversation about being seen as women, being heard as women, loving ourselves. It's just a great conversation. It was actually the only interview that I have ever cried when I was listening to Jara. She just has such a beautiful way of speaking, and you can really see and hear the raw emotion in her voice. But before we get started, we have a very special offer for our listeners from Street View Adventure. They are giving all the listeners 10% off their Sunny Florida retreat and tour with Robin Myers, Dare to Live Your Best Life Now. I will put the code you can use down in the show notes. For some reason, I'm having trouble talking today. So sorry. But it's 9 days, 8 nights lodging, plus breakfast, dinner, you know, all the activities. You're going to receive coaching from Robin Myers on how to harness the positive power of fear to your advantage. And she'll teach you about choice, chance, and change. They're going to be staying in a beautiful luxury beach house close to Panama City, Florida, and I think it's just really going to be a great time. So for 10% off, I will put all the information down below, and hope to see you there. I think it'll be a fabulous time. All right, now on to my interview with Jara.
Thank you. One of my beliefs is that part of the human experience, in order for us to grow and expand faster, is actually by sharing our stories. Not everything has to be learned firsthand experience, but we can learn a lot through other people's experience if we pay attention and if we apply the lessons that they learned.
Yeah.
Instead of reinventing the wheel, we need to expand upon the wheel.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so true. And it's something I think my daughter, who is now, oh my gosh, 35. I can't believe it. Because I used to tell her in her 20s, I'm like, what good is all this wisdom if I cannot impart it upon you? So I used to say those type of things to her. And now she's saying to me, you know, she's getting it now that she's 35. But yeah. Anyway, so I would love for you just to tell your story in any way that you want. You know, I think the women in the group who are over 50, I've gone through divorces. They, you know, thought that the one option was ending their life, including, you know, I had that really bad experience too. And then I wrote down some things. I loved what you said about that you had to let, like, you even cut communication with your mom. To go through that, to figure out, and then how that you thought your, and this is so applicable to every woman I've talked to, is that you were setting your goals and living your life for what you thought was your life, but it really wasn't. It was to make other people happy.
Yeah, the people pleaser, and I'm sure the generation of those who listen to your podcast can also relate, that the social construct that we grew up in told specifically young girls and women that you have to give 100% of yourself. You must sacrifice literally your body in order to have value and to have purpose. And for many years, I came from a very strict religion, and I would ask those in authority, I said, what is my value as a woman besides a sexual object or giving birth to other human beings? Because within the construct of the religion that I was living in, I had no value unless it was dictated to me by a man. And so I was always trying to, like you said, make everybody else around me happy. Now, from an intellectual standpoint, I knew that that wasn't healthy. And I was so intellectual that I could actually reason with myself on how those goals that would make other people happy would actually make me happy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it until after my divorce and I started dating this man. And I remember calling him one time and we were trying to set up, he was flying in from another state, how it was going to work out. And he told me, he said, well, why don't you just make a decision based on what's right for you, what works out best for you? And I was angry with him because when I hung up the phone, I realized I wasn't making goals based on what was best for me in my life. I was making goals based on what I felt would be best for us and what would be best for our future, totally ignoring what was best for me. And one of the things I feel as women, we also totally neglect and don't fully realize is that when we are walking 100% in our alignment, then we will attract the right people into our lives. But we get so stuck on, I want that one, I want with that exact name and that exact look, otherwise life is going to be hell. Uh-huh. And we've gotten into these codependent habits that we have to break ourselves of. And I remember probably last year, I had a realization from the universe because I had all these goals set for myself, but they were very status symbol goals. Like, oh, I want to make $1 million. I want to live in this house, in this neighborhood, drive these cars. And the universe, I don't even remember the exact event that happened, but I learned the universe said, you know, Jerry, you're setting very little, you're limiting what I can even bring to you. Like you say that you want happiness, peace, and ease and joy in your life, yet you're saying it can only come through this way. And there's so much more that I could bring into your life that would actually really, truly at a deep level bring you what you want. And so society kind of has screwed us over. It's their job.
I totally agree. You know, just listening to what you were saying about setting goals to, you got angry, setting goals to make you two happy. I'm with Steve. He's 13 years older than I am. I've been married and divorced twice, and he's my third relationship. We're not married, but we live together. The best relationship I have ever had. But he'll say things to me like, whatever makes you happy, sugar. And my instant thing is like, well, what will make you happy too? Mm-hmm. Instead of, okay, I'm entirely going to make myself happy. So I'm really trying to, you know, do that. Like when he says, whatever makes you happy, in a really sincere way, when we're having a conversation about how I want to move forward in my life. So I find that really difficult. It's a hard habit, for lack of a better word, to get out of.
Yeah. Because so much of what we want is, well, what will make you happy? And underlining, I believe it's also validation. Like, what is going to make you love me more?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Which comes down to our self-love. Like if we had enough self-love, we would realize that, oh, even if they don't love us, I'm still going to be okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
And last year, so there was this one man, and the universe had so much fun teaching me so many lessons through this one man after my divorce. But I remember I was at this conference and I had a very hard time asking for help from other people. For one, just because of previous experiences, I didn't believe that the help was going to be what I needed to support my authentic truth. And I had this very strong feeling. I was at a writer's conference in Oregon, and I had this very strong feeling like, go and call this man and ask him for help. Like, just honestly share your vulnerability with him. It wasn't anything specific, but just in general, how I needed him to support me in life. And so I was like, okay, I'm doing this. He didn't answer the phone. And I left a message, and he never called me back for like a few days. But what I learned in the meantime, between me leaving a message and him calling me back, the universe taught me an amazing lesson. It said, Jara, look, you reached out for support and it wasn't there, and you're okay. You are okay. Because yeah. Sometimes I feel like we're afraid to take those risks because we think somehow our world is going to collapse if the other person does not show up in a way that we want them to show up.
Yeah.
But in all reality, we're going to be okay regardless of how the other person shows up. And we need to keep extending ourselves and expanding ourselves and releasing those barriers that are inhibiting our human experience, growth and expansion. So it's it's fun and exciting.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. And I, you know, I can think of so many times in my life where I thought, and it just really wreaked havoc because I would get really emotional in that moment when that support or that help that I really needed at then wasn't present when I thought it should be. Like, you should be at my beck and call, whoever I need. Yeah. So it would really, but I have learned over the years that, yeah, I obviously have survived without, you know, having to have that immediate support or whatever from the universe. It does say to you, just simmer down, sister. Things are going to be okay.
They're going to be okay. Yeah. And there's a lesson in there that we obviously needed to learn. And if the person had showed up how we wanted them to, we may not have learned that lesson.
Yeah. I spoke with a woman in Florida who has been on my podcast previously and talking about the universe showing up for you in ways you don't expect. I'm going to do a little spoiler alert here, but we're doing a chat on creating a vision for yourself. And she does vision board workshops, and she had this one woman who had a bunch of dollar signs and a picture of a Maserati and a house and all that. So she was talking to this woman about how, you know, what is the emotion and the feeling? What do you want to feel from these things? You just don't want a house. What does that mean to you? And so she said a couple of days later, she was rescuing chihuahuas or adopting chihuahuas. I don't remember exactly. But anyway, someone showed up with a chihuahua whose name was Maserati. I had to kind of chuckle at that because it goes exactly to what you're saying, is that you never know what the universe is going to, how that's going to manifest itself to you. So
yes,
this puppy named Maserati.
And you know, so really interesting story. The universe does always show up for you. And what I have found in my own life is that it shows up in a way that you feel about yourself. So there was a time when I was on welfare, and the money was always showing up for me. It was always there. However, it was showing up through a way that validated how I felt about myself, which was shameful, lacking of any quality or contribution to society. Like, I felt I was just taking and taking. But the universe does show up for you, like that Maserati, but in the most unique ways.
Yeah, you've got a couple of really good stories about that. When I was listening to that really great interview with Sean, you're breaking down, trying to find the church, and then also the homeless.
Yeah. Would you like me to share?
I would love to share.
Yeah. Well, let me share that with you. So I have to kind of share the backstory of the divorce. I was married for 10 years, and it wasn't a horrible marriage. Like, I actually didn't even have context for why it felt wrong, because there was no physical abuse. There was no emotional abuse. He didn't demean me with his words, but he didn't ever talk to me beyond any superficial conversation. He didn't even touch me unless it was for sex. It was just such a shallow existence in terms of our relationship, and he cared more about what other people thought than what I thought. Mm-hmm. And I remember the day that I realized it was never going to change. There had been a conversation he had with a female friend, which I'm not against gendered friends. Friendship, I don't think, has gender, but you do have to watch your boundaries. And I read the Facebook message because he had left it up, and this was just the last straw on the camel's back. when I told him, I was like, you know, this conversation you're having with her, it's just making me uncomfortable. And he told me, he said, well, then don't read my messages. And then we had an argument about that. And then he said that he would unfriend her. And I was like, you don't have to unfriend her. You just need to check your boundaries with her. But anyways, he didn't unfriend her. And his reason was because he didn't want to hurt her feelings. Yeah, he was fine with hurting my feelings.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this was so many instances like this in different situations where he would care about other people's feelings way more than my own, mm-hmm. than mine, or even the children's. And so the morning that I realized that this was never going to end, I sat there on the edge of my bed, and the pain was so great, and I just wanted the pain to end. And I thought to myself in a very calm way, what is the quickest way for me to end my life? Like, this has to be the end because I can't take this anymore. And I even remember sitting there thinking to myself that I was in such a calm state of mind that I thought this really was what my journey was supposed to be. Uh-huh. And all of this happens within just seconds. And the next thought was, well, if it's part of my journey, that means it's part of my children's journey. And eventually they're going to understand why their mom had to commit suicide and all this pain. And it'll be part of their growth. Like I was literally rationalizing why this would be okay and of benefit to them. But luckily, the very next thought was, if my children can make it through my death, then they'll make it through a divorce. Uh-huh. And that's when I started fighting. And I'm not one to argue. Like, I will debate and have discussions, but I do believe in healthy communication. But this, I started fighting with my husband at the time. And it was beyond just an argument over an issue or a relationship. Like, I was fighting for my life. Because I knew that if I didn't start at that moment to fight for me, that no one else was going to. Because nobody knows what's going on internally. You literally have to fight for yourself. And so that's when everything exploded. And it's been amazing the man that he has turned into because of the divorce. And he even said that the divorce was his moment of awakening because he never thought I would divorce him. And he was right. just socially construction of my existence, divorce wasn't ever on the table.
Yeah.
And so when I finally was able to let go of that relationship and started to acknowledge myself, the process began where I started seeing even just a little bit of worth and the importance of me taking care of me emotionally and spiritually and intellectually and physically. Like we discussed at the beginning of this conversation, women, especially of our generation, just sacrifice and sacrifice. And I realized I couldn't do that anymore because I couldn't give what I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have love for myself, and I couldn't really fully give that love to my children. And so I started going to the gym. I started eating right. And for the first time ever, I left my kids for 5 days to go to a conference. And it was the first time I'd ever left them. First time I'd ever taken time for myself. And this was probably 8 months after the divorce was started. And as all moms know, when you're with your kids, you try to keep a strong face because you don't want them to carry your burdens.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to Ohio. It was Lewis Howes' Summit of Greatness 2018.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful conference. Mm-hmm. So I got there on a Wednesday, and the workshop started on Thursday. So I had a day to just do whatever. And I thought I would just go on a walk around the city and see what was close to the hotel. And as I was walking around the block, I passed this man selling newspapers, and I just thought he was a panhandler. So I just kept walking. And then I saw a homeless lady sitting against a door front, a window door front. And she was holding a sign that said, "Even a smile makes a difference." And I was like, oh, that's cute. That's unique. And just kept going. And then I turned down an alleyway that led to a beautiful park, a commons area. And so it was a nice alleyway, not like a sketchy alleyway, and there was this homeless man just sitting there rummaging through his bag. He didn't have a sign. He wasn't asking for any money. And as I passed him, the spirit said, "You need to turn around and give him money." And I thought to myself, but what if he doesn't want money?
Yeah.
And I was like, you want me to turn around and give him money? I don't really believe in giving homeless people money, because I believe that there's a lot of programs that we need to help support that can actually be of greater benefit than just money.
Yeah.
I just had this strong feeling, and it literally stopped me in my tracks. And so I turned around and I pulled out a few bucks and I said, "Hey, can I give you some money?" And the guy looked up and he's like, "Yeah, of course." And he took my money, and then he hands me this bag, and in this bag there are like new socks and a box of donuts that was half eaten and a few other little items. It looked like one of those bags that a charity would go around handing out to homeless people. And he's like, "Take this." And I was like, "No, I don't want it." And he's like, "No, take it. I was just going to throw it away anyways." And I was like, "No, I don't really eat donuts. So you keep it." And eventually I was like, "Jared, just take the damn bag. Like, he's trying to give you something."
Somebody wants you to have that bag.
I just want you to have the bag. And so I just took the bag and I kept walking. And I was carrying this bag and I was like, what do I do with this bag? I couldn't throw it away. That just felt morally wrong, because it was a gift, but I knew I didn't want it. And so then the spirit was like, "Remember that lady sitting by the door, the storefront around the corner, go give it to her." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness, I'm going to just keep walking around this block and people are going to think I'm crazy." So, which, you know, those little social constructs of people pleasing that we allow to interfere with our direction. So I walked around and I once again passed the guy selling newspapers and took it to the lady and I gave it to her, and she just, huge smile came across her face, and she's like, "You know, this was exactly what I wanted today." And so I gave it to her, and then I walked back towards the man with the newspaper. So this would be my third time passing him. And then the spirit said, "Stop and buy a newspaper from him." Well, it turns out that this newspaper was to help bring awareness to the homeless problem. And so it was homeless people. It was their poetry, their stories, their art. And so as I was talking to this man, I pulled out money and I pulled out a 20. I was like, "I'm really paying $20 for this little newspaper pamphlet." And the spirit was like, "Yes, give him that $20. So I gave him $20, and then I took the newspaper. And across from the hotel where I was staying in Columbus is their town, their city hall, which has a beautiful parkway around it and some benches. So I went and I found myself a bench and I started reading it. And this poetry from homeless people who have actually led extraordinary lives and for one reason or another found themselves homeless on the streets. And I realized that these people just wanted to be seen and they wanted to be heard.
Yeah.
And I sat there and it was sinking in. And I didn't know yet the power that was going to have, the voices in that newspaper. And I just sat there just thinking about how everybody, even homeless people, just want to be seen and heard. And so then later that night in the hotel room, I take a 2-hour shower, which every mom I think can appreciate.
Yeah, those are luxuries, even 5-minute showers.
Yes, yeah. Luxuries for sure. You know, uninterrupted, just had my phone playing music. And I just, for the first time, really allowing everything to wash over me that has happened, like the divorce, my marriage, life, all the expectations that I had for myself that I hadn't lived up to, just everything. Just, there was moments of tears and just relaxation and just really being there. When I got out of the shower, in the hotel room, there was a full-length mirror. And for the first time in, I think, ever, I looked in that mirror and I saw myself. And I went over to the mirror and I put my hands on my hands in the reflection. I said, "I see you. I see you." And my heart just opened to realize that this whole time in my marriage, all I wanted to do was be seen and heard from the one person that I thought was supposed to love me unconditionally. And in that moment, I realized I didn't even love myself through that marriage. I hadn't shown up for myself. So how could I really have expected anybody else to do that for me? And it was just very cathartic to stand there totally naked and to truly begin to accept and love me for me, all my imperfections, with all the failures that I felt I'd had over life, and just to be there and love me. And then the next day, the workshop started. And it was probably about 11:30-ish, and I was in this workshop. It was packed. I mean, there was people standing around the sides, and I was in the far side away from the door, right in the middle of the row. And the spirit's like, Jared, you've got to leave right now. And, you know, that people pleaser comes up and was like, oh, but I'm going to get in people's way. And
what will people think?
Rude. It's going to be rude to leave early, you know, and I'm going to destruct be in their view as I'm trying to get out of here. And the spirit just kept, hey, you got to go now. Like, you have to leave now. It's like, okay. So I just excuse myself. I'm 6 foot tall. So when I stand up, it's quite a presence. And so I'm like trying to make myself as small as possible.
I'm 5'10", so I sort of get that. Yeah.
Yes, you do. And the moment I open doors and I exit, and the moment those doors close behind me, I just start bawling. Just this emotional flood just washes over me, and I just start bawling. And I'm trying to stay composed because there's people in the corridor. And of course, my brain is thinking, oh, what are they going to think of me if I'm crying? Because that's not social norms. So I go as quickly as I can, and I make my way across the street to the city hall again, and just find a bench that's a little secluded. And I just allow myself to cry. And I just sit there, and it was a very cathartic cry. And as I'm just finally catching my breath, I hear these beautiful church bells ringing. And after about the third or fourth ring, the spirit says, you need to go to that church. And I was like, man, we're in a hurry today, aren't we? Everything's a rush these days. So I get up, and I just have to listen to the church bells to try and find the direction to go. And I stop a man, and I'm like, hey, where is this church? And there was only two buildings away. And it was a Catholic church, and I didn't know that Catholic buildings, they actually are open. And so I went, I opened the doors, and I start walking in. And I noticed on all the pews, as I'm walking down the center aisle, almost every single pew had a homeless person laying on it, sitting on it, sleeping, just being there. And I make my way to the very front, and in the very front pew, there was nobody there. So I took a seat, and I'm looking up, and they have these beautiful glass windows, and I just get this really strong feeling like you need to pray. And Catholicism wasn't my religion, but I've gone to Mass with enough friends that I knew they had a little kneeling bench. So I put down the kneeling bench, and I knelt, and I started praying. And in the first time for a long time, it was a prayer that I felt came from deep in my soul. And I started praying vocally, even with people around me. I couldn't even stop myself. And I was praying for forgiveness. Not forgiveness from God, but I was literally praying to myself, asking myself to forgive me, and to forgive me for how I showed up for the past 10 years, to forgive myself for allowing me to be in such a relationship where I felt like shit, to forgive me for not loving me. And this time it was a cry, like I was sobbing and there was snot everywhere. And I remember thinking, with all these homeless people around me witnessing my breakdown, what an amazing gift that was. Because here in my vulnerable state, they were seeing me, and they were witnessing me and my authentic self. And even though no words were exchanged, I could feel from their energy, hey, we understand. And you're safe here. You're safe to be yourself here and to have this breakdown. And it really made me think about our incarnations and our spirit's journey and what we need to learn in each of our experiences in order to grow and expand in a spiritual sense. And what a gift it was that these people decided to come and to live such a hard life. But what a gift their life was for me. And I've never been able to obviously find those people to thank them, but just being witnessed as a human being and being seen and being heard was very powerful for me. And I felt such a release and so many barriers being opened around my heart again. And I mean, the night before there was a bit of a breakdown and an expansion. And then through this self-forgiveness and witnessing from others in my vulnerable state really opened me up to my authentic state. And it led the 4 weeks that followed were phenomenal. And I realized looking back, I had energetically called into my life a beautiful experience with a man that I met there, where I had met him there, and then we were contacting through email. We never had sex or anything, which is only important to know because during those 4 weeks, during that communication, we had such a soul connection that I would literally have waves of emotion, of ecstasy come over me where I would, oh, I'd have to grasp for air and hold on to the washing machine or the cabinet or the counter, wherever I was. And it was the most amazing feelings. And I realized that it's because I was allowing myself that. Because as humans, that's part of our experience, is to feel that ecstasy. And my sexuality was something, as you can imagine, being raised in a really strict religion that didn't truly honor women, my body was never, I was taught that I didn't own it.
Yeah.
God gave it to me, but God owned my sexuality until I got married, and then my husband owned my sexuality. And so it was always something that I felt ashamed of.
Yeah.
Or that I couldn't fully enjoy because somehow I wasn't supposed to enjoy that. But through the experiences in Ohio and the forgiveness and just the opening up and shedding of all that bullshit, it was truly orgasmic. Just the living and the being without ever having that physical connection with the man. And I know that relationship was very short-lived, but I know that it was the universe's gift to me to show me that it was possible.
Yeah.
Because quite often, if we don't know that something is possible, Mama, we don't even know that it's attainable or to goal. Can we have a picture? Yep. Sorry, I just had a little one walk in.
Don't you worry about it. Don't you worry about it.
Yeah. And I think of it like the 4 minute mile. They actually said that it was impossible for a human to run a sub 4 mile. But then once one person ran a sub 4 minute mile, the next year, 10 more people ran it and then more. And now it's basically, if you want to be in track and field in the Olympics, you run a sub 4 mile.
Yeah.
So you just have to know what the possibility is to attain for. And that relationship after my divorce, like I said, was very short-lived. I know had nothing to do with that man and everything to do with a loving universe saying, Jarrah, you had a shitty relationship, but this is what it can feel like. And this is what you need to be striving for. And I wasn't ready for it at that moment. I mean, my life was still in chaos. I was becoming a single mom, going back to grad school. I had to think about working. There were so many other things that I needed to do, but I needed to be reminded of my worth. I needed to be reminded that my sexuality was something to be honored and that also supports and enhances my life. So it was a blessing.
That is just such, I just love that story. I even though this is the second time I'm or third or fourth time, I don't know how many times I've listened to Sean's podcast, that just it literally brings tears to my eyes because for lots of reasons. But what makes me really sad is that I have talked to several women through this podcast whose option is to end their lives. That's their option. They wake up and they think, I have to do this. I don't know any other way out of this. And I had someone say to me who I was talking to that it isn't necessarily that we want to die, but we want to get rid of this miserable around us. We want the miserable to end. And I had a similar story where I broke down in the middle of a run in Colorado. And like one of those big snot producing, like you talked about, you know, cries. But it's like it's like the shell around you just starts crumbling. I mean, I can visualize like you're encased in glass. And as your glass starts breaking, Jerry, you start feeling all these things and you're able to feel and experience because you've let go of that miserable. You've let go of, you're letting go of how you think you should live your life for other people. And it's very empowering. And I can just, you know, obviously see the emotion that still brings up in you. So thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, that's a very vulnerable place to be. But I also know that a lot of women were where you are and were where I was. I've lost her.
Belly, I am so sorry about that.
I lost you. That's okay.
I am so sorry.
It happens. It's the world of the internet.
Yeah, it just totally cut out.
It's happened to me before. But no, what I was saying, we can edit this, so it's all good. What I was saying was just thank you for sharing your story. I know that's not an easy thing to do, but a lot of women feel the same way you do and as I do, and knowing that other women feel that way, I think is very important for the journey.
Yeah, definitely, that you're not alone.
Exactly. And to be seen and to be heard, just to have someone else say that, I think is very empowering too. And I don't know what else to add to what you've just said, because it was just so brilliant. But I hope that the women listening can have the courage to do the things that they need to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Before things.
Yeah, and if I could add for them. If I could add one more thing that I would hope that all women begin to realize is that we don't need other people to have joy and happiness in our life, and it truly. An extremely extraordinary life comes when we find that self-fulfillment and authenticity within ourselves. And we do make those choices that align with our authentic truth. And then the universe will bring people into our life to help support it. But we have to remember that it is not the person that is necessary to fulfill, to create joy and happiness in our life. They're literally just there to support us, and we need to allow everybody to walk their path. And when it's time to end our walk or journey with that person, that it is okay to say thank you and to send them off with love, and that in no way diminishes our value to let them go in peace.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that we don't love them, or I think the media has done a great job in romanticizing what love should look like, that you're going to die and your heart's going to be in pain and anguish. But true unconditional love is realizing when, yes, your journey should be together, and that's the most beneficial. And then also to say, hey, you know what? I can't give you what you truly want in life, and I love you enough that I want you to be ultimately happy, which means it's not with me.
Yeah.
And that the universe loves you enough that there will be someone else. Like, there will be someone else that can bring you more joy, more ecstasy, more fulfillment than the person you're letting go of. Like, it always works out that way.
I agree. And Steve and I talk about that a lot. He's been married and we've both been in very unhappy relationships. And you say it much more eloquently than I do. I was like, you know, if you're not happy and I'm not happy, it's time for us to look at the relationship and say, you know, it was fun. You were good for me. We had a great time, but I need to let you go now. And let, you know, not that it wouldn't be sad, but realizing just what you said, that the journey with us has ended and it's going to be okay. I mean, it took me a long time to realize that, but you're so right about how, you know, it's so romanticized you know,
to have that one person.
Exactly. Here I've had three. So what does that say about me? Right. But,
nothing.
No, I know, but I was just joking. but you're so right. But, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much. Oh,
you're welcome. It's truly my pleasure.
I look so forward to having this conversation with you. I just think you're brilliant and brave and authentic. And it's so nice to talk to someone that's so open and vulnerable and having the willingness to share their story. So I really appreciate that. But before we go, I always put my guest on the spot and ask them this question. Looking back at what you've told me and being true to yourself and being seen and being heard, what is one thing the listeners can do today to start on that journey? What's one thing you would tell them that they could do?
I would offer the opportunity to stand in front of a mirror, clothes or no clothes, but to look straight into your own eyes and to say, I love you, Jarrah, or insert your own name. Mm-hmm. And to actually name the qualities of yourself that you don't love and acknowledge that. Say, Jarrah, I love you. You're fat and your bank account is negative and I love you.
Yeah.
And then also to name the good qualities about yourself too. So to name both the good and the bad, like, Jarrah, I love you. Your hair is rocking today and I love you. But we need to acknowledge our weaknesses and love them. And we need to acknowledge our strengths and love them as well to encompass our shadows and our light.
I love it. I think that is a great, great action-taking step that people can do. Well, thank you so much, Jarrah. Oh my gosh, I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Shelley. It's been a joy.